Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Joe, Sting addressed the fans and talked about a certain word, so he assumed people were assuming what he was going to say, which if all you do is watch AEW TV was weird, but I guess online speculation drove the way that he presented the interview. And then he talked about his history and some of the wrestlers he traveled on the road with in WCW, and then brought up how in those days during the prime of Lex Luger, the Steiners, and Buff Bagwell, I don't know if I bring about those being my friends. He said, you know, they looked at these aging legends and wondered why they kept going and going. And he says, look at him now. And he understands the smell of the arena, the camaraderie of the wrestlers, and the reaction of the fans. But, and then you're like, okay, you know, when? And he said he debuted at Revolution 2021. He's going to retire at Revolution 2024. So we have a several-month warning of the end of his career. And he said this time it will be final. We'll see about that, although I think it's safe to say at his age, and given the context of everything and all the boxes he has checked in his career, this will be the case. I thought it was a good promo. In big news. I mean, I like the idea of announcing it months ahead so that you know fans can appreciate every last mini chapter of his countdown to retirement and anticipate what that last match is going to be. So yeah, I think it's top story of the show. And he's been around a long time and been a big star during most of that time in many different places. And now we have, I think, the potential for a proper send-off. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I felt that this Sting promo was, the main thing of consequence on this show. It was the most important, leading headline coming out of this, that there was speculation that Sting would be, perhaps announcing something around retirement. And that's exactly what we got here, with the reflection of talking about the history, like you said, the reason why other people from generations before him, why they stuck around for so long. And, it was just really nice to have a promo like that from Sting where there's no interruption from the heels. It's just, giving him that moment where clearly this chapter of his career has meant a lot to him. As he alluded to, that his career was cut short in 2015 and didn't end the way that he wanted it to. And this gave him another opportunity to just do things on his own terms. And I think that he's really he's really embraced all the moments and special times that he's had in AEW. It's given people another lens to view Sting, as opposed to what had happened in TNA and just the short stuff that he did in WWE. And so I think that this was really important to him to reflect on that. And now it just gives everybody the chance to really appreciate every moment that they have of him coming out or any sort of action or matches that he does. And I think that it's a nice way to cap it off, that he started off with the cinematic match that he did with Darby Allin in 2021, and now it's going to lead to something in the arena and hopefully, in front of a large crowd in a major city for Revolution 2024. But I think it's going to be, a nice way to send off, like they had done, for the Great Muta, that it was kind of like, hey, let's go on this farewell tour so people can really appreciate that. And then every match with them really matters. And so it gives just another really big thing for AEW for people to look forward to seeing what Sting does, who are his last opponents going to be, and what ultimately is that final match for him.
You just said my follow-up question, the last match for Sting. Any ideas what it should be, what it likely will be, what you personally want it to be? Pick any of them.
Well, I mean, it's got to be the Nature Boy Ric Flair, right?
In a way, yeah. I mean, no.
We all know it's got to be Jay Lethal, because he's always the guy who comes back for the retirement matches.
Yeah.
He's part of this. No, I have no idea, really. I would imagine it's got to be something with Darby Allin because he's meant so much to Darby Allin's growth in the promotion, that those two seem to have made a genuine bond with each other beyond just, you know, being on-screen characters together. So I'd imagine it's something with Darby, but, you know, who are their opponents going to be? I mean, who knows at this point? Could it be something where they drag it out all the way with Christian Cage and Nick Wayne? I mean, man, that's Revolution's probably going to be what, you know, end of February, early March.
Yeah.
So you would imagine that they probably move on from that at that time. You know, so it's, you know, I think a lot of different things are going to happen from this point to then. So it's just difficult to speculate, you know, who is going to be that major one. Is it going to be somebody that Sting, you know, has a real appreciation for, that he wants to get in the ring with one last time? Is it going to be a first-time opponent that he'd really like to do something with? Is it somebody else who really wants to get in the ring with Sting? I mean, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, who are these last opponents? Do they put him in major spots? You know, is it going to be a tag match? Is it going to be a singles match? I certainly hope it's a tag match, so that we get, you know, more action out of it. And I think he's worked really well doing those. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. It's a ways off to just think, okay, it's going to be Sting and Darby against Christian and Nick Wayne. It feels like that's something that should happen at Full Gear or a New Year's show or something like that. So, yeah, can they rev something up in the meantime? Is there something, you know, on the spot right now I'm not thinking of that makes a ton of sense?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a singles match is asking a lot, but there's sort of like, does he want to go out in a tag match, or does he want to go out having a big singles match? I mean, it could be the first time Edge and Christian face off. Maybe they built, you know, because Edge tonight said, I'm not going to face Christian. I'm just going to be there to pick him up when everybody abandons him or drops him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm trying to construct this here. You have Edge, Sting, and Darby against Luchasaurus, Christian, and Nick Wayne. But it consists of Sting having to talk Copeland, that's Edge, probably, Copeland into wrestling opposite of Christian, but something happens that causes Copeland to say, okay, I'll do this. But again, that feels like that's a long ways off. And
yeah.
I mean, dragging, you know, you use the term, can they drag it out that long? I mean, it's a challenge. Maybe they can. Maybe Christian just says, I'm going to avoid Sting and Darby, comes up with some excuse, and they kind of go on a sidebar for a couple of months. Maybe they do an injury angle where there actually isn't a lot of Sting between now and then. Or maybe, you know, in December there's an injury angle with Sting, and then he comes back in January or February and makes a big announcement. And it is, you know, it does seem appropriate rather than belaboring the point and dragging it on too long. There's not a lot else that just jumps off the page. I mean, Sting against Aleister Black, Malakai Black. No.
Yeah, I'm just perusing the roster page right now, and there's just nothing that really stands out at this point. I think there's just a lot of things that, you know, are going to happen between now and then that could, you know, where the answer starts to become obvious, you know, maybe a month or two from now.
Yep. Do you have a favorite memory of Sting?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, most of Sting's prime was before the time I was watching wrestling. But I've just really enjoyed his time in AEW. You know, I saw some of the stuff in TNA. You know, I saw some of the Joker Sting stuff that I'm not a huge fan of. You know, and just some of the other stuff of just kind of being around there. You know, some of the earlier Jeff Jarrett stuff that I saw there. You know, it's just my age, you know, and the time I've been watching wrestling. But really, his AEW career has just totally reshaped the way I think of him, you know, and see him as a legend, where, you know, he's not always talked about in the same circles as, you know, as someone like a Ric Flair, you know, where they're known for a lot of things, having great matches and stuff. But Sting on his own has, you know, the TNA nickname of the Icon. I mean, he really has become an icon in wrestling and become this really respected legend that people really love. And, you know, it's just really changed the way he's thought of, especially I think his promo style has greatly improved. You know, his presentation, just being a more kind of serious character, where he's just shown, even though he's older, not as athletic, I think he's shown just more versatility in his personality.
He has the perfect gimmick to seem ageless. You know, because of the face paint and the hairstyle and being, you know, he wears, you know, he obviously doesn't have the same physique he once did. Although it wasn't that long ago, he was, you know, showing off his arms and wearing tights. So, you know, more traditional ring gear. So, there were times where I argued that Sting was not Hall of Fame worthy, even at a time when most people thought that was a crazy thing to say. But I made my argument. This is like 15 years ago, or 10 years. Yeah, probably 15. Now. Just that, you know, he had the look of a main event centerpiece act, but he just never delivered in that role. I shouldn't say never. You know, obviously there was he peaked during the Nitro era, but he peaked when he wasn't saying anything or doing anything. He was just hanging out in the rafters because he had a great look and a great innate charisma. But I argued, you know, when it came time for him to deliver as a main eventer, both in the ring and on promos, he came up short. And for a lot of fans who grew up just, you know, not looking at it through the lens of is this working or not, but this guy's cool and I love his charisma and I want his poster. It was kind of jarring, but he hadn't, in my way of looking at it, with my criteria, had a Hall of Fame career. It was this mirage of being this top success story. And he was always sort of on this parallel track of other people who looked the part but actually delivered. And he was on this parallel track in WCW and had guaranteed contracts. He never really had to figure out how to draw. He just kind of did what came naturally to him. But again, you know, and he went through tough times in WCW in his personal life too, and it took a toll, and he was part of a very dysfunctional environment, and that didn't help him grow as a performer. So there are all these, like, you know, and I've elaborated on it a lot in much more detail than I will here, but I was like, nah, you know, I don't think he was. But now he's added so much more to it. You know, I thought he did at times, most of the time, very good work in TNA. And getting a chance to be in WWE and see how that worked and be featured in a way that might have never happened was a really important chapter in building a Hall of Fame career. And then in AEW, I think they've underutilized him. I think he should have been framed as a bigger deal, not just a guy who kind of wandered to the ring now and then. I think every appearance he made should have been treated as this big deal. That, like, every appearance should have seemed more special on average than AEW framed it. And I thought they started taking him for granted, and I think then fans did too. But when you look at the length of his career, the span of it, from Jim – I mean, I first saw him before he worked for WCW, you know, when he was working for Mid-South.
Yeah, teaming with Warrior.
Yeah, so, you know, he traveled, you know, from – California Indies and training to Memphis to Mid-South, then to Jim Crockett Promotions, and he had the match with Flair. I traveled to Baltimore to see him beat Flair at the Bash in 1990. And, you know, the word on the street was it's going to be Sting's coronation. He was going to be WCW's Hulk Hogan was a phrase being used. People can read in the back issue section my coverage of the build-up to that and in the match and the fallout. You know, I was there for the crowning moment, and it felt like a big deal. I was sitting on the front row thinking, I'm here for I'm seeing history. And then it turned out, without Ric Flair, he just didn't have chemistry with very many people in the ring, and he was just not a well-rounded enough worker to just kind of take over in a company known for work rate. Had Vince McMahon gotten his hands on him, he would have masked that and had a bunch of people create movements and had workers around him, but Sting didn't have that cast around him when he was champion, and then he had that unfortunate knee injury. And so one thing after another just sort of led to him not having the 1990s that people thought he was going to have at that event in 1990 in Baltimore. But when you think about everywhere he's been, there's, you know, Jericho's been to as many places. You know, I mean, like, there's a few wrestlers who you can go, all right, they've been in main events and featured on television in meaningful feuds for as long and as many places. There's few who are even in the ballpark of Sting. You know, Chris Jericho's one of them. We could, you know, try to come up with a list of names. But
yeah,
people like
longevity.
People like Edge are a legend, and his career started like a dozen years after Sting. So, and he didn't travel to all the places Sting did. So it's it's going to be a big moment. It's going to be, you know, it's weird because Sting's been around since I started covering wrestling, and it's getting to the point where the longest careers that were in progress when I started are coming to an end. But with Sting, it's longer than I think anybody would have predicted. I mean, what he's still able to do in his 60s, and as he referenced, maybe in, I don't know if it's a self-deprecating way or what, but he goes, you know, should I be diving off balconies? Well, maybe, maybe not. We'll talk about that later. I'm glad he acknowledged that. I, it seemed like Sting was trying to prove his worth at a time when I think he should have, been picking safer ways to go about proving his worth. But you know, it's a testament to his work ethic that he didn't show up and go, I won't do that. I won't do that. I can't do that. He didn't want to prove himself. He didn't want to show that that it wasn't a charity case based on nostalgia. He wanted to keep up with the kids, and he did.
Yeah.
And so my long, my long journey through this, and it isn't to diminish his career when I point out shortcomings, but it is his history. It's factual. Even in an opinion sense, it's factual that the opinion was he came up short in ways that WCW that cost him the opportunity to be a centerpiece effective draw for WCW in the early 90s. But I am at a place now where everywhere he's been and what he's done, including the last few years, I mean, he is, you know, by whatever criteria you go by, a Hall of Famer. Joel, you can add anything to that, and then we'll shift gears.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all that. I just think that, you know, the way that he has been used in AEW, that I agree that there's a way that you could have made him more special and not used him as frequently. I felt like there was a stretch of time where it's like he was used just for run-ins and involved in all sorts of brawls and stuff with Darby Allin. But, man, I mean, it's hard-pressed to give them anything less than like a B-plus in the use that they've in their use of Sting, you know, B plus to A minus in my mind, because just the way that they present him as a legend and having him feel important, but especially just the rub that he gave to Darby Allin and really got him to another level where Darby was already so talented on his own, but just having that association with Sting and how that fit so well together, just took him to just that next step. And I think that's just a thing that Sting is probably super proud of, that he was able to help a younger talent, because a lot of legends talk about that they want to help the younger generation. Yeah. And a lot of times they come up short, you know, where they still are trying to get themselves over and, still live their glory days and get their own spots. And he was just a guy who really put other people first, it felt like. You know, that he did his high spots, he tried to fit his worth, but it just really seemed that what was important to him at this time was working with the younger guys and trying to get them over.
Yep. Well put, and that is an important part of Sting's career. So, this chapter of it. I want to pause and introduce ourselves and give out the phone number and email, and then get to calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, October 18th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, launched when I was in high school in 1987, when Sting was early in his career. And I launched pwtorch.com in the late 90s, and I am host of various podcasts, including the flagship edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which dropped yesterday with Todd Martin. We led with a preview of Saturday night's Impact Wrestling Bound for Glory pay-per-view. We don't get to lead very often with Impact. Doesn't usually raise itself to the level of being the lead topic, but it is their biggest annual event. They've been around a long time. So if you are not paying a lot of attention to Impact Wrestling, we previewed that. Todd did most of the previewing, and I threw a couple questions his way about different things, including Alex Shelley being in the world champion role and his thoughts on that compared to his partner Chris Sabin and some others. So check that out. And then we got into all the stuff from WWE TV and AEW over the last week. Search Wade Keller in your podcast app and subscribe to the Blue Logo Show. That's our regular podcast. If you haven't yet, this is our Red Logo Show, the post shows. We live stream after Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Raw, and then the live stream becomes a downloadable show a few hours later on our podcast feed. So search Wade Keller, subscribe to the Red Logo Show also. The other voice you hear is Joel Donnell. He is a longtime PW Torch contributor and co-host on this show. We have been talking AEW since its earliest weeks, AEW Dynamite since its earliest weeks on the air. And it's always great to have him back, especially on a week like this where we can talk about Sting the way that we just did and have that as a major headline to talk about coming out of the show. But Joel, there's a lot more to talk about, and we got emails and phone calls, and we got a rising star in Kyle Fletcher, who kind of in a way is reminding me of some of the early impressions people had of Sting, although he's already, you know, dare I say, a better wrestler than Sting was, even in his early years when he was having great matches with Flair, and showing that tonight with Kenny Omega. I think there's something with Fletcher that is pretty special right now that we're seeing in a way that people talked about Sting during that initial run in the late 80s when Sting was doing things that people of his size with his physique, and he wasn't massively muscular. Well, he was pretty muscular. He wasn't as muscular as he was when he and Ultimate Warrior were first a team as Blade and what were their names? Now, the Blade Runners.
Yeah, it was the Blade Runners.
Rock and I knew this forever, and now I haven't thought about it for a while, and people are yelling at me. Anyway, Sting's leaping.
The Dingo Warrior, or Blade Runner Rock, and what's the other one?
Does it start with an S? Rock and, well, you'll look it up while I'm talking.
Yeah.
Dingo Warrior was Ultimate Warrior's name, world-class championship wrestling. Every time I think of that name, I think of Bill Murray.
Blade Runner Flash.
Flash, it had an S in it. There it is, yes. Flash and Rock. Trivia questions. Many trivia questions.
That's always like the – that was always like the – 10 years ago, it's like, can you believe that Sting and Warrior tagged with each other?
Yes, I know. So Sting was obviously a better athlete than Ultimate Warrior. But what jumped out about Sting in his early performances on TBS was the leaping ability. You know, it seems quaint now, but when he was at the height he got and the athleticism he showed really jumped out. And then there was this just exuberant enthusiasm on the microphone where he'd lose his train of thought. It was endearing early on, and 12 years later, it's like, come on, grow up and learn how to talk. But he would lose his train of thought constantly in promos through his whole career. But it was endearing when he was just starting. And he would just be like, I don't know what to say. I'm just going to yell. And he would yell as like a crutch because he would lose his train of thought. That's where the yelling came from. But fans bought into it.
That's what I should do on this show.
No, you should. and fans loved it. You know, they yelled back, and Sting referenced that tonight. It was cool. So back to Kyle Fletcher, rising star, and I'm going to just kind of draw that parallel that I think he's at a similar point right now with the impression he's making that Sting did in the late 80s on TBS. And so we'll talk about that match with Kenny Omega cutting a promo and kind of being in the ecosystem of AEW and mentioning the world title. I'm happy to see that. I want to see more of it. We got a lot more to say. I know a lot of people bring this stuff up in emails and we'll elaborate on it. But first things first. Oh, that's my train of thought. Let me yell. No, I'm kidding. Our number to call and join the conversation is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That will flag you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. You are welcome to do that even if you don't listen to our live stream. As you're watching Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision, if something crosses your mind or you have topics you want us to address, send that email in, and then you can listen to the show later. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right. So let's I think where I want to go from here. Why don't we go to our first call, Mike B in SoCal. I believe it's where Sting and Warrior got their start. Mike, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Wade, it's been about 2 years since I talked to you. We're actually residing about in Houston, Texas now, but I refuse to give up the SoCal tag. And, you know, like your Minnesota Twins, I'm siding with you right now, my friend. Now, I did cut, I have Cone with me. I did cross off a bucket list item, Sting for the first time. Super excited, but I've been to a lot of bad shows over the years. This had to have been the worst in-person event that I've ever been to in terms of, like, a televised show. Like, I don't know how it came across on television, guys, but it was slow, it was methodical. The matches, for what it's worth, were fantastic, as is par for course with AEW, but there's not a lot on AEW television right now that's grabbing me, and I'm really trying here. I'm not typically Mr. Negative as it pertains to these type of things, but I can't get over it. Like, it was really, really slow. The crowd was pretty enthusiastic given the pacing of the show, I thought. You know, I do think they could probably benefit from like, you know, more so with the Christian stuff, the I don't know, man. good versus evil always works, and I feel like AEW is just muddying far too many lines right now. What do you think, Wade?
Yeah, so as sometimes happens when I do the post show, I'm frantic, especially AEW, by the way. I'm frantically keeping up, trying to keep up. My cat stepped on the remote control, like, with 15 minutes left in the show, and I lost my spot, and then I had to reset the Roku machine because I don't know what the cat did. And so I'm even scrambling more than usual. I haven't had a chance to digest the show in the way that you framed it. I'm digesting it as a host of a live podcast. Like, what are the A topics?
Right.
What do I want to talk about and emphasize? In terms of the overall quality of the show, that's actually something that I kind of think about as I'm doing the show and later. And then we just talked about the thing for 15 minutes. So I'm kind of processing your take on it, especially from a live show experience. What stood out to me is you had dominant squash matches from Lance Archer and Wardlow, and then you had a gimmicky battle royal, and then you had two other matches, a women's match that went less than 10 minutes, three other matches, women's match that went less than 10 minutes. But then you had the Jay White Penta match, which was good, and Omega and Fletcher, which was good. So to me, from watching on television with everything put in between the matches, I thought it was a good TV show. I thought it advanced storylines. It had a big moment with Sting. They, it had a real mix of things for the TV viewers sitting at home. But it was heavier ratio-wise on things that, you know, with a sit-down interview with Nick Wayne and his mom and the Roderick Strong thing at home. I guess I could see where from a live experience it would seem less than it was early on with AEW when it felt like TV viewers were just looking in on a house show, as opposed to now you guys are sort of props in a crowd as people at home are given a more traditionally modern structured mix of things. Joel, what do you think about what Mike said?
Well, what's interesting about that is that one of the questions that I've written down for an on-site correspondent was, were the fans and you satisfied with the wrestling tonight?
Yeah.
Because I just, I thought that the one good match that we really saw on the show was Kenny Omega versus Kyle Fletcher. I was pretty disappointed, actually, with the Jay White Penta match. And just everything else, like, there was three matches on here that all started with, somebody being attacked before the bell rung, and then, a couple squash matches, the Emi Sakura versus Shida match, which is fine. I just thought that from a live perspective, and that's a lot of the ways that I view wrestling, is like, how, if you were a fan in the audience, are you satisfied with this match more so than just the TV presentation of this? Because yeah, there was a lot of content, a lot of good stuff. The backstage segments that were strong, and some stuff that was not so great as well. But I just felt that, for a live perspective, that you would have hoped for a little bit more, during the show. And it seems like you felt the same way.
Yeah, it was absolutely a rough show to be at live. And like I said, I don't mean to dismiss the good work that they did with the promos and the segments. And a lot of that stuff was fine. And it's funny, I actually thought the opening match between Penta and Jay White was a little less than I anticipated as well. Like, don't get me wrong. It was a very acceptable match. But I guess I was just expecting a little bit more as what I've come to expect from those two. There was a lot of chance during the show, and, they really gave Rosenberg, Texas, a stacked event, but there was a lot of wrestle in Rosenberg, and the fans were pretty vocal and very supportive of a lot of the AEW wrestlers, as is atypical in an AEW show, but, they're with all the chants and cheers, but there was a lot of chants and cheering for, like, more wrestling, which isn't something that I've typically seen before. Just like
elaborate on that. How was that? Like, elaborate on how that manifested.
Yeah, it was just a lot of during a lot of the segments as it related to the video stuff. Like, this was a new arena, so there wasn't like a Tron to show the action when they were outside the corners, and a lot of it was, like you said, starting before the bell, and just a lot of the stuff AEW, typically leans on, and it was just a lot of wrestle for Rosenberg, please chant and cheers. Like I said, there was no bad matches per se. Like, it wasn't terrible. The gimmicky stuff was gimmicky, and that to me seemed probably, pretty over as it pertained to the live crowd. They had to phone the Hardys with the Daniel Garcia stuff. Like, that was all fun and great. But it was just a lot of fans wanting a lot more. And even the stuff they were announcing for Rampage, like, multiple times, please don't go. We have more wrestling coming up. And like, that's all fine and good. But at the end of the day, for me, I mean, I only paid $20, so I'm not upset whatsoever at seeing this show. I didn't pay a premium for this ticket. But I really just think AEW, with the live experience, this is only my second live AEW show. The first time I went 2 years ago in Houston, it was way different, as you said, kind of looking in on a house show. I never thought of it that way, but it's actually a pretty good way to put it. This one seems more, you know, dare I say, WWE entertainment-y, which you know, it's okay. Yeah. They have a lot of those characteristics now, and I'm fine with it, you know what I mean? But it was really – I sound ungrateful, but it was really rough in person. It really, really was for me, at least, and my son, who's 13.
So,
we've been going to shows for years together.
Interesting. Yeah. So elaborate on rough in the sense that there was about 50 minutes total of wrestling. And so that's a lot of downtime. It's probably below average. I'm not sure. I don't have those stats in front of me. But was it rough also in terms of production values? Was it rough in terms of star power? No Moxley, no Danielson, no Bucks. Like, did you feel short on that end? Elaborate on what felt rough.
So, yeah, my son was basically like, where's everybody at? It felt very, very low on star power. I mean, the Hardys probably got one of the biggest pops of the night. I don't know how much came across on television, but as they were setting up the Battle Royal, and I know they're probably going to commercial for a lot of that, I mean, I think five people came out to the Best Friends music. It was like... And I don't want to say amateur hour, you know what I mean? But it was very, like, they were struggling to kind of move that stuff along. Comically, you know what I mean? But it was a lot of that. Like, the star power didn't seem there. Jay White's fantastic if you've watched him outside of AEW. You know what I mean? Like, overness and in terms of marketability and stuff, he's great. But, like, in terms of what AEW's done with him, and don't get me wrong, the Bullet Club was fun tonight. Like, legitimately pretty fun in person. But, I mean... Kenny was over. I mean, everyone was super into Sting, as is to be expected with a legend like Sting, and you know what I mean? But, like, there wasn't – I don't know, man. There was not a lot of star power on this show, and I don't want to say that's what hurt it, but it just didn't seem like a television show. Like, I don't know. Like, it seemed like it could have been, like, a Rampage event 2 years ago as they were fading it out into Collision. You know what I mean? Or a year ago as they were fading out into Collision, if it was a two-hour event. And they were really pushing the battle belts hard as well in person.
Hmm.
So
Joel,
do
you have a question?
Like
yeah, I mean, Mike, are you sticking around for – I mean, are you still there? Or is Rampage going on right now? Because
yeah,
I know that they had the Mystico versus Rocky Romero.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because no,
I know that that's a big draw for people to stick around and see that Mystico match.
Yeah, I mean, we're about 2.5-3 hours away from the border, so there was a lot of lucha match,
okay.
A lot of, you know, I mean, Penta was probably the most over there, at least in person from what I saw. So, I mean, obviously, I'm guessing that was a large part of bringing Mystico up. But no, we actually didn't stay. I work in the morning, but the matches they announced for Rampage didn't really draw me in aside from that. I think they had a Wheeler Yuta and Claudio tag match. I mean, they're stuff I can catch up on later on, to be completely honest. And I had every intention of staying for Rampage if the card was somewhat decent, but I didn't. I felt like the hour drive home was a better use of my time.
Sure. Did Tony Khan address you guys in person once or twice?
Oh yeah, he did, man. You know, it's funny because I don't stay up to date too much with the Twitter X stuff, but I can see why he loves it, because those fans love him. Like, they adore him, or at least they, you know, he definitely addressed us. He was talking about the Astros and stuff like that. So basically pandering to the crowd, which is great. It's fine. It's par for the course, right, with people. But he did definitely address us, come out, and they told him he had like a minute and a half left. And he was like, I'm going to try to stall for another minute, which was kind of fun. yeah, I mean, it's like I said, been to AEW events before, at least one more. I did not feel like this. This was 2 years ago. I didn't love this show from a live experience. I mean, it's on my DVR. I'll watch it in a day or two just to see how it came across, as I usually do with wrestling shows I attend. But it just – in person was rough, man. Like, just all of it. I don't know. Sorry. I wish I had more to give
talk
you
talk about being there – no, that's fine. Talk about what it's like to be there for the Sting speech. and how you think the crowd received that. Sting walked out and acted like everybody knew he was announcing his retirement, which is weird. If you just watch AWTV, all they did is say Sting's going to address the fans. Obviously, it crosses your mind that might be the case because it's Sting and he's, quote, addressing the fans. But did you sense all the fans were expecting him to give that kind of a speech, or did people have sort of catch on to it as he talked? And just talk about how you feel about being there for that moment.
Yeah, I felt like it was just a bomb he dropped. Like, everyone I was talking to, you know, I had people around me who were like age, and we were just like, we were totally super excited to see Sting. Like I said, when I first called, this was a bucket list item for me. Like, I've never seen Sting in person, been to probably 40 shows in my life. Like, never seen Sting. Super excited. So once I saw he was going to be there, like, I was doing everything I could to get there to go see Sting. I had no idea that I would see him retiring for a second time, as he kind of jokingly played off. But, I mean, seriously, like, I didn't get any wind of Sting. I mean, any AEW television even hinting at a Sting retirement. I mean, he's not on TV frequent enough for me to even be that, to be crossing my mind, aside from he's 60 years old, right? So I think when he even said it, he kept saying one word, I'm going to say one word, I'm going to say one word, and I don't think anyone around us really thought that's where he was going with that. At least that's not the perception I got in arena. Like, everyone was just super excited with their phones out to see Sting. Like, if that makes sense. How did it come across on television? Like, was it clear that that's kind of where he was going, or how they were framing it, or was it kind of just, huh?
I thought it was the weakness of the promo was Sting assuming everybody knew what word he was going to say, because again,
nobody knew.
AEW comes from this mistaken belief that mm-hmm. everybody's on Twitter as much as Tony Khan or the fans that wrestlers interact with on Twitter actually, or, you know, through other social media stuff. And it's like, they need to draw more fans than that. And what you just said is evidence, you yourself and others, is evidence they need to direct their TV show, not in a way that insults the audience who are aware on social media and absorbed in all this and listen to podcasts like this and go to websites, but aim the show with the assumed knowledge of only what has happened on TV, only on Dynamite and Collision, and, I mean, catch people up on Rampage. So it's interesting. I didn't know what your answer would be. I thought maybe everyone would just be like, oh, yeah, we knew Sting was going to announce retirement. But you didn't, and it sounds like fans didn't. And so, yeah, I think that's a misstep, and it's fatal flaws overstating it, but it's an annoyance for me, and I think counterproductive for AEW. Yeah. That they continue to think everybody lives the life on their phone that they do. And people don't, and they need to direct their product at people who don't, because there's a lot of people out there who feel left out and confused and think they keep missing weeks of television because Excalibur and wrestler, everybody just acts like they should know more than they do. You and I have been saying that since, like, you know, the third episode of Dynamite.
Absolutely.
You know,
Absolutely.
It just befuddles me that they are so in this echo chamber that I just think is delusional. I know people, oh, it's 2023, everyone knows. No, they don't. And as Mike just illustrated, Rosenberg didn't know.
Well, I mean, I'm calling into a post-AEW Dynamite show. If someone would know, I feel like I'd be in the know. I listen to PW Torch.
Yes.
PW Torch. I mean,
yeah.
You and Todd for years have talked about AEW feeling very much like an episode of Being the Elite, right? Like a lot of the stuff that happens if you're up with Being the Elite, like, you're aware of what's going on, or these angles or these feuds, or I can't keep up, and I try to keep up, but I can't keep up. I had no idea. And to be honest, everyone was like, well, it makes sense, he's 60 years old. Like, it wasn't like everyone was excited to hear it or not excited to hear it. It was just once he said it, we're just like, oh, that makes sense. Kind of like you said.
Yeah. And he's 64, by the way. I want to give him credit, you know, for what he's able to do.
Sorry.
He's going to be, you know, almost 65 by the time he retires. So, you know, he's trying to work until.
That's crazy. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
That he's going to be 65. I know 65-year-olds who, they twist their knee getting into the ring.
Hey, don't bring up knees.
He's wrestling with Darby, right?
What about Darby?
He's ending with Darby, right? Well, I mean, he's ending with Darby, right? That's who he's probably wrestling, I'm assuming.
I don't know.
I
don't know if Sting should have a singles match, and I don't know that I want to see him against Darby because of what that might entail Sting doing on his way out that I don't think physically he should be doing. I like the idea of a tag match. Like, my idea is Copeland Darby and Sting against Christian Luchasaurus and Nick Wayne, but that's, you know, a ways off. So they'd have to have a real, you know, compelling story to, or have an injury break or something to bridge us to that.
Wait, color me.
Joel's
idea
of Ric Flair.
Ric Flair. Joel, that is not a good idea, sir. But to be honest, if I had to watch Ric Flair face Sting or watch Sting team with Darby and Copeland versus Luchasaurus, Wayne and Christian, I don't know which one I would pick, to be honest. I think that's kind of a lackluster way to go out as well, to be honest with you guys.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I remember watching that Impact episode where it was like Ric Flair's last match, and it was Ric Flair versus Sting, and I thought that was a super special moment of those two guys getting in the ring one last time.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, man.
Mike,
well,
let me ask you this.
Make your
comment. Sorry. Yep.
I'm just as far for the course rambling. What were you going to ask me, Wade?
What kind of reaction did Kenny Omega get? Big star, this is great. We're seeing this legend in person, or something less than that. How would you frame it relative to your expectations, other big names you've seen in person, and relative to others on the show tonight?
Yeah, so that's a tough one, Wade, because I am of the opinion that it was weak on star power, so everyone was very excited to see Kenny Omega at that point in the show. He was by far at that point the biggest AEW star that, in my opinion, had came on the television in the event, so he got a pretty big reaction. Would you agree, Cohen? Pretty big reaction. But, I mean, last time I saw him, he got a bigger reaction than that. But again, AEW, as we've kind of seen, isn't quite where it was 2 years ago, so, I mean, makes sense, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
He
was fantastic. Like, absolutely fantastic. Yeah. I've seen some of his stuff online with Aussie Open and stuff and in tag matches, but he's a single super-duper star in the making. He is fantastic. Like, absolutely incredible, I thought.
And when they talked about how tall Hobbs was, and then Fletcher comes out and just looks down at him,
yeah.
It was like, wow, you know, there's some size there. And again, it's there's a presence there. Where did MJF's reaction land compared to your expectations and compared to, Kenny Omega?
I thought that MJF was not going to be in the building after they did the backstage stuff with him. So I think a lot of other people did as well. And it kind of, and I'm not sure if they framed it on television like that, but when his music hit, it was probably the biggest single, like, three-second pop of the evening. As it related to him and Kenny, though, like, I don't know, somewhat similar, maybe a little bit hotter, but again, it was just a weird show, Wade, man. Like I said, I've been to 40 wrestling shows, and this was just a weird one for me, seriously. Like, I'm up on the product, I'm aware of what's going on, and it just seemed okay, in my opinion. But definitely it wasn't muted. He was definitely over, of course. I thought... For those of you paying attention, like, to the side screen, I thought Robinson stole the show. He's so goofy to me. It just works for that that quartet right now. He's just fun. I don't know. Obviously, he's solid and blah, 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 but he's just fun. But, yeah, I mean, MJF and Kenny, I would say MJF got a little bit stronger reaction, but nothing over the top. And like you, I thought Kenny's promo after stating his focus is – on the championship was good. It's about time for him to say it out loud, at least.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Joel, do you want to ask anything else to Mike?
Yeah, just going into some of these on-site correspondent questions, is I want to ask about what was the reaction like to the Roderick Strong, Adam Cole segment? I mean, it's just another one of those that Roderick Strong's house and just another goofy thing that it just watching it from home, it's not funny. It's just kind of there, it's kind of drawn out. How does the crowd respond to that in person?
Yeah, it wasn't a lot of wrestling matches, man. So the fans weren't overly thrilled to be sitting through it, but they played along and were kind of laughing enough. They received the Tony Storm stuff in person way better than the other one, though. They were all over the Tony Storm stuff. I thought she was fantastic. Again, I mean, for whatever character she's doing too, Joel, like she was great. Fans definitely took better to that one than they did to the next strong stuff, though, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I've known some people who are really into this Toni Storm stuff. I mean, it's a different kind of character. Her and Juice are trying to be the wacky characters on the show, you know, husband and wife. But I know some people, especially some female fans, who are really into this whole Toni Storm silent movie character.
I think it's great. I love it. I'm more on board with the split screen gimmick too, now that we just know that's going to be a thing. Last week with a world premiere, I was like, wait, it's on a tiny screen. You built this up. I wanted to see it on full screen. And people took that as, you know, taking a shot at the concept of holding people's attention during a split screen break and having this be a gimmick along with, you know, Sammy Guevara's cue cards. Mm-hmm. But it
worked
for me tonight.
I forgot that. Yeah. Sorry.
It was.
That's great.
Yeah, so it did, you know, I mean, it's still like, it's good enough, it deserves full screen, but if it's silent, it's, you know, it makes sense, you know, even though I had to, you know, watch a loud, you know, commercial for whatever.
Super clever.
Yeah.
Super clever.
Yeah, what was that commercial? That was super loud during that whole thing.
Yes. I mean, I kind of want to just mute the TV, but I don't think that's going to do a lot for sponsors being happy. It was a commercial for Big Bang Theory is what I saw at the beginning.
So you liken the character just to a split screen movie character, I mean, a silent film movie character. I always thought she was kind of broken and as such, I've been comparing her to Victoria from back in the day when she was kind of broken. Is that not how you see it? Or, I mean, that's how I see it.
Well, I haven't quite gotten to the point where I can say what her character is in a sentence or two, but she is a delusional, broken, spotlight-hungry...
Golden-age Hollywood starlet.
Yeah, well, for sure that, but, like, the modern version of her, like, what drove her to this alternate universe? Because she is grounded as a real person people can pay to see who wrestles, and we know who she was before this. And so we know she's a real person, but now she's gone into this weird alternate universe. Yeah, Joel, how would you describe her to somebody who says, what's going on with Toni Storm?
Yeah, I mean, she's just kind of descended into this, you know, melodrama, you know, just kind of after all these things happened to her, she just kind of descended into this other thing, you know? I mean, it just kind of happened. I mean, not a lot of explanation other than, you know, she used to be with Saraya and Ruby Soho, and just all of a sudden she just kind of slipped into this other personality.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's tough.
So
but
Joel,
it's tough.
Without,
I'm
like, some inciting
up.
Incident, you know?
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
So, Joel, if I can, so you have a friend coming over to watch AEW Dynamite. They've never seen professional wrestling before. You say, hey, watch this show with me, and then this comes on. How do you explain it to them? Like, how do you explain this is professional wrestling, though?
I mean, it's – you hate to say it, but, like, this is what it is that it's a variety of a lot of different things, and it's a lot of different characters, and they try different things. You know, it's unfortunately, I like more of the sports-like presentation of more of kind of the drama of the matches, who's the best wrestler. But I mean, that's how I'd have to explain AEW is that it's catering to a lot of different people and they're trying a lot of different things and they're letting people, explore these different things that they probably wouldn't be allowed to in other promotions. And, you know, this is someone's interpretation of trying to do something different. And, you know, personally, I just think for the women's division, I mean, I think it's great that somebody is trying to explore a character and do something different because there's not a lot of that happening.
Yeah, ideally for AEW, this is sort of like people paying money to boo Dominic at a WWE event. You want people to pay money to be present for suddenly the arena going black and white and traveling back a century to a whole other era, or at least that alternate universe that she conjures up and sort of you believe she lives in now through some delusional breakdown. She's had some sort of breakdown that's made her delusional, that's led to her casting herself in her own mind in another era and in another role that is a coping mechanism for things not going the way that she wanted to in the present day. And she has leaned into it more and more in an unexpected, in an unexpectedly immersive way. And RJ City has been a willing co-conspirator to help validate her delusions as she now is exploring her movie making and movie starring the unfulfilled dreams of a kid watching black and white movies, I guess. I'm trying. Yes. He's good in this role. He's good.
Cold they found star. Something for him. I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Mike, anything? Oh, how full was the building?
Probably, I don't know, about 80% of what was available, maybe a little bit more than that. Obviously, on the non-hard cam side, it was kind of empty. But I thought for a brand-new building, and I'm kind of nervous to say exactly because I once kind of quoted it to you, and Pat McNeil kind of hit me with it. It was way fuller than that, so I just kind of sheepishly went into my little corner because I'm not great at these things, but I thought it was about 80-85% full from what I can see at a brand new arena here in Rosenberg, Texas. And the venue was really nice, and everyone who was there was extremely enthusiastic for the most part.
Anything else you want to add from your experience tonight?
I actually have nothing else to add, but I do have to ask as it pertains to the Toni Storm gimmick, and I'll just take the answer offline. Is this just, and again, with MJF doing the comedy stuff, obviously a world champion can be a comedic figure in AEW, but I mean, is her gimmick just like a mid-card gimmick to you guys? Like, she's going to be super babyface, right? I mean, like, where can this go?
Oh, yeah. Boy, I don't even know if they thought about that. I mean, I'm not even being cute about it. I think they just think we're onto something. We'll figure it out later.
Fair enough.
She's gonna be a upper mid card babyface who either is gonna catch fire and be more than that, or play itself out and then kind of come out of it. And then recalibrate and regroup to try to be taken seriously again. And it could go either direction, and maybe what I said first happens first for 6 months, and then what I said second happens after that. But stay tuned, because I don't think even they know, honestly, at this point. I think this is just an unexpected, fun sidebar that it helps them hold the audience during a commercial break.
All right, well, thanks for taking my call, guys. Thanks for letting me sit on here with you guys for a good 20 minutes. As always, I really appreciate the torch and all that you guys do. I've been 10-plus years now, man, so thanks for everything, guys. I'll continue to listen as long as you guys are doing it.
Awesome. Thank you, Mike. So glad you called.
Thank all right,
you,
Mike.
Have a good one, guys. Bye-bye. Bye.
Yeah, thanks. If you want to be an on-site correspondent like Mike was, let us know ahead of time. Email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com and say you want to be an on-site correspondent. Put the name of the city in the subject line. It's a little bit easier to stay organized if you do that. And then we can arrange to anticipate your call and bring you on the show. That applies to Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision. All right. We had a couple of people drop off during that. If you want to call back or push one, you can. The number is 347-215-8558. And when you call push one, you're welcome to talk about what match you want to see Sting have or anything else from tonight's show. We do have some emails, and I want to get to Zach in Texas first. And he goes, tonight was a perfectly fine episode of Dynamite. It was nothing spectacular, but that's okay. I feel like a lot of stories were moved forward, Christian and Adam Copeland, Darby and Sting against Christian's crew, Hangman against Swerve, and, of course, the world title. Speaking of the world title, Todd Martin had to be in hog heaven, not only with MJF serious and focused, but multiple people from Omega to Wardlow to current challenger Jay White made clear their world championship aspirations. I feel that was a deliberate effort to recenter the world title, which is a very good thing. Oh, and a shout out to Toni Storm. The silent movie had me absolutely cracking up. So Zach brings up a good and pertinent point, having Wardlow show MJF. Not Friedman, by the way. He wrote MJF on his tape because mm-hmm. he's not going for anti-Semitic undertones, picking at scabs of past trauma. Yeah, and so to have him bring that up, bring up MJF, and then Kenny Omega talk about that, plant that seed, and Jay White, and MJF being more serious, this was a course correct or happenstance, whichever it was, deliberate or happenstance, a move in the direction of making that title seem important. Now, of course, I will be in hog heaven when somebody addresses the idea that maybe management should have some say-so over whether Jay White gets to parade around fraudulently with the world title, as everybody explains that he's not really champion. He just stole the belt, and no one feels they can do anything about it other than stare at him parade around with it. So that would make me happy. But, yeah, Joel, I mean, I am all for more mentions of the world title, more people aspiring for it. There's this, I think, false, flawed, fraudulent, so I can do the 3S, notion that if someone else brings up that they want a world title match, that it takes away, it might overshadow the one that actually is imminent. I don't think that's an issue. I think if everybody's talking about the world title, it makes Jay White, who's in line for a title shot, feel like he's got something, he's going after something more special, and he is at the head of a long line of impressive names. So I am all for more wrestlers mentioning they want to be world champion. Did that stick out to you, and what are your thoughts, Joel?
For sure it did. Yeah, that was one of the main things that I took away from it, is just like that was really the whole point of having Wardlow go out there, because, you know, he came out for the quick squash with just the one powerbomb, referee calls off the match, and I'm just thinking like, okay, now what are you going to do with this with Wardlow? And then Tony Schiavone comes out and he's got MJF on his tape, and, you know, that follows up on Double or Nothing from 2022 of when they had their match together, and Wardlow looking for that championship and gives him a mission statement by just lifting up his wrist, you know. And then also with Kenny Omega having that interaction with MJF, and MJF whispered in his ear 13 days, taunting him about breaking his championship reign record. So that's curious if they're going to, if they're going to follow up on that, if Kenny Omega is going to get a chance anytime soon to help prevent that. But just anytime that they're talking about the championship, that's what really the basic fundamentals of Wrestling 101 should be, is building around that world championship, that top prize, you know, the Lombardi Trophy, the Stanley Cup. That's what we all work on, all these regular season games. That's why we have all these weekly television shows, is building up our records to get the opportunity on the big show, the grand stage, to go after that championship. And that's really fundamentally what it should be all about. So I think that anytime that you can insert that in there and just let people speculate, it doesn't have to lead to something immediately. You know, you can talk about the championship and talk about your aspirations of going after the champion and not have that be the immediate next thing you go to. It allows people like us, people online, people just watching the show, to speculate about these matches coming that could be coming down the road. As I mentioned before, when we were talking about AEW, you know, when it was first starting, is that what was really fun was to speculate and think about these different matches that could be coming up down the road. And so I think planting those ideas into people's minds is just what gets people more energized and excited about the future. You're just hearing from a lot of people that, you know, that they felt like this was, you know, just an all right show. And it was a middle of the road show, because that's where we're at right now with things, is that we're not immediately after a pay-per-view. We just had Title Tuesday, so we had a bigger Dynamite show, but we're still 4 weeks until Full Gear. So it's just, you know, we're kind of in the holding pattern where we're slowly building, and hopefully it continues to ramp up over the next couple of weeks.
I want to go to James in Clemson's email. He follows up on the point we're talking about here. He goes, one thing that I really liked about tonight's episode was the way that everyone seemed to be gunning for MJF. It really makes the world title feel important when top guys have goals of being the top guy. One thing I did not like about tonight's episode was the predictability of the matches. Every single match had an obvious winner, even the Battle Royal. If AEW wants to draw more eyes to TV, they need to start putting top guys against top guys in matches that matter. Thanks for reading, and go VIP. Thank you, James. You know, I don't think about that aspect as much as I should, which is viewers' desire to not know the outcome of a match that they're watching. I do think I'm cognizant of the idea that there is frustration among AEW fans, AEW TV viewers, that Tony Khan is stingy, and to the point that a lot of matches have been missed out on when it comes to putting big names against big names on TV. And you know, I think the perception is, as a booking philosophy, he wants to save big matches for later and have them have those cards that he can play. There were so many matches we didn't get with Cody that have been great to have, for instance. However, I think part of it, too, is how segmented the locker room is, that there just are a lot of big names who don't have interest in working with certain other people. And I don't think Tony Khan is running things in a way with the leadership to say that, thank you for your opinion, but that doesn't matter. You work for me and we're doing this and do it. And I want you all in on it. So I think part of it is some of the matches we're not seeing are because those are people on different sides of a somewhat still fractured locker room. People want to kind of do their own thing with their own pals. Bryan Danielson is sort of an altruistic version of it. Danielson's like, I want to work with this guy. I want to work with that guy. I want to work with that guy. But, you know, there is a good amount of that going on. Some of it isn't that people don't want to work with other people as much as they just have the list of people they want to work with, which is their buddies. I want to put him over. I want to elevate him. This person can have the kind of match that I want to have. And so I think that combined with a little stinginess and a booking philosophy leads to a lot of nights like this where you're like, well, Jay White's not going to lose, but they'll protect Penta. There'll be interference, a distraction finish. Of course. And, you know,
right, but then he always loses.
Yep. And then, Sheeta's not going to lose to Sakura. And Wardlow's going to win this squash. And Omega, of course, is going to beat Fletcher. Unless they're doing a losing streak angle that leads to something. But Kenny kind of, I don't know. It's just, I think that was fairly predictable. Even if you were trying to talk yourself into the possibility that maybe this would be a wake-up call for Kenny if he lost to Kyle and Kyle's getting a big push. Archer, of course, is going to win a squash. And, yeah, I mean, they gave Dustin a soundbite. But that wasn't enough to make it seem like anybody else was going to win that match. So the Battle Royal, unfortunately, they could have done a parallel angle where Johnny TV was obsessed with it. And Danny Garcia was talking about this being, this is going to be the big moment of his year, and have Jake Hager say, I'm out of Jericho's shadow and I'm going to assert myself and whatever. I mean, they could have given us more sound bites throughout the show of that, but that would have meant cutting back on, something else that wasn't in-ring action.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different things to comment on with that. As far as having, like, the big matches and, not having top guys against other top guys, I mean, there's just other ways to do it other than just throwing out the big singles match out there. I don't think that there's anything where Tony just seems like he doesn't want to have the guys touch each other. He wants it to be the first time that they're together. That's the first time they're going to have any sort of interaction. And I think that you can certainly do it in tag matches where you can have, stars against other stars, and they can only, they only have to do a couple minutes with each other, just get people a taste of it to get excited about seeing that match down the road. Have the commentators talk about that. Wow. What we just saw between them, imagine what that would look like in a full singles match against one another. Again, it's giving a lot more of that excitement of things that you can look forward to in the future instead of like, all right, well, this is the track we're on right now. And it just seems like some of these stories just go on and they go on and you're just waiting and waiting and waiting till you finally get to that big match with it, that by the time you get to it, it's like you're ready for the whole thing to just be over with and on to the next thing. But the drama of the matches and wanting to, have some of the unpredictability, takes away some of the fun of watching wrestling. Is that what's really fun is when you're able to watch some of those matches, especially like I my mind immediately goes to some of the G1 Climax matches where it's kind of like you think maybe a couple of the guys who are going to win, but, there's a lot of upsets in there. Sometimes the whole tournament goes into another direction that you weren't thinking of. And it just leaves it to be a lot more fun with the unpredictability, whereas, AEW was complimented so much for in the early days that, they had very logical booking. There wasn't just upsets out of nowhere, and there wasn't things that just made no sense and weren't followed up on. But I think that they could do for some more unpredictable finishes and go in some directions that you weren't exactly thinking they were going to. Maybe set it up in one direction and not exactly a swerve, but set it up in one way, but then also have it be a logical, other path, just an alternative way, and start telling a different story than maybe people have thought you were setting up to. You know, not just crazy turns out of nowhere, but I just think that there's a lot of other paths to be explored other than just A plus B equals C type of storytelling.
Yeah, yeah, well put. Okay, another email topic here. JB from Detroit, excuse me, says, Don Callis gets mega heat that I would argue relative to crowd size is on par with Dominic Mysterio in WWE. He's been doing an excellent job of being the sleazeball manager who will sell you out in a second when you're no longer useful for him, like Kyle Fletcher tonight. The way that he went from this kid is incredible to this kid is huge disappointment was both funny and effective. Christian is playing the overall better heel currently as he is essentially both a manager and active wrestler, but I'd argue Callis gets the better genuine heat. By the way, well, we'll get into it. The Christian going, you should have picked up the phone, which is amazing. Yeah, Callis is doing good work. Callis should not be somebody who is used in small doses the way that it seemed like, or inconsistently the way that he was for so long. He should be one of the top 10 priorities
yes.
every week on Tony
yep.
Khan for Tony Khan. I think there are things that Callis can do that are unfocused and self-indulgent and just off target. But I've seen that over the years. And, you know, like I've said, a lot of times on commentary in Japan and stuff, I think he just – or in Impact Wrestling and on promos over the years, there's things where I'm like, stop trying to pop the boys in the back with this insider line that people are, oh, I can't believe Don said that on TV. Like, he got too wrapped up in that kind of thing. He is now focused in being the best Don Callis heel manager, taking advantage of his talents that I've ever seen him do. And it's always been in him, but he needed to direct it the way that he is now. And the sleazeball manager, Tony Schiavone, being disgusted, just uttering his name or thinking about having to introduce him. The music I wasn't sure about at first. I'm still not 100% sold on it, but I think I'm coming around to thinking it's a good, distinct choice. And yes, this kid's incredible. This kid's a huge disappointment. He's distinct from Christian, and it's fun to have two heels doing pretty different things right now, and it both working. Talk about Don Callis, Joel.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, that Christian and Don Callis, I mean, they're top level heels right now. And Don Callis, you know, everything that you said is totally valid, but he just, you know, he's not Paul Heyman, but he's AEW's version of a manager like a Paul Heyman, where it just feels like the A-level stuff. And when you can have a heel like MJF was before all this Adam Cole stuff, a heel who can really talk the talk, you know, they can really help shape a promotion and shape the tone and direction of the entire show. I feel that when Don Callis comes out there, especially now with Takeshita and Powerhouse Hobbs, that just feels like the A storyline. That just feels like the main thing, the thing that feels the most important to me that I'm most interested in seeing, just because of his whole delivery, the way that Tony Schiavone responds to him. You know, I just think that Don is really at the top of his game. And as you mentioned, it shouldn't just be, you know, kind of sprinkled in, you know, every couple shows or something. It should really be a top level thing. I mean, we've heard the idea that people have floated around, you know, Takeshita winning the world championship. And I think that having someone like Don Callis again, you know, in that top spot to talk for him, absolutely. That could definitely be, you know, your world champion, the main event level scene. I'm just really impressed with a lot of the work that he's been doing lately.
What's his upside? Like, what more than what we're seeing now do you think that he can do to contribute?
I mean, I think that he can continue to add like he has been and continue to build upon, where he's brought a lot of these kind of, you know, younger up and coming names, you know, not the biggest name people, and taking them to another level. I mean, Powerhouse Hobbs feels like he's important again, just
yep.
by the association of being with Don Callis, Takeshita. I mean, he was kind of the, you know, really more of a kind of bland baby face, but a great wrestler. You know, it was like, man, there's something there. But ever since he associated with Don Callis, started wearing the jacket, that guy feels main event. And just the way Don Callis, the street cred that he has, that he constantly refers to of, you know, being associated with Chris Jericho, being associated with Kenny Omega, Now he's trying to transfer that over by finding his collection of younger guys. And I think he can continue to build upon that and you know, keep teasing the stable, that making it not just, hey, I'm thirsty, looking for people to join me, but making it seem like more like it is an exclusive club. And that was the way he portrayed it to Kyle Fletcher.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we'll see how you do against Kenny Omega. I like your attitude. That's the kind of – and you start – forming, like, what are some of those core values that you're looking for in a group? And he starts looking for those types of people. But then they got to prove it with those wins, especially taking out Kenny Omega. And I just think that's an intriguing layer, other than, like, you know, join the Dark Order or come on, join our group and sign this contract. And then we get duped and you start beating up our guys and throwing instead of making it like a real exclusive premier wrestling group.
JB also says, do you think tonight might be the beginning of a face turn for Kyle Fletcher after Callis sold him out in their interaction afterwards? With Mark Davis being out for some time, it seems Fletcher will be getting a singles push, and I could see AEW wanting him to be a face. Yeah, Fletcher's going to be a single star in AEW. That seems to be the course he's on. That seems to be how they're utilizing him. He might feel bad for Mark Davis, you know, leaving him behind a little bit. Fletcher has a, I think, brighter future than Mark Davis, but hey, Mark Davis, step up and show you can find your niche as a singles wrestler or with a new tag partner. But yeah, Fletcher is emerging right now in a way that I think should capture some people's attention. And again, so one of the most fun parts about pro wrestling and following it is seeing people on a, you know, seeing wrestlers on a journey. You know, I was talking about the Bret Hart journey, you know, just kind of a jobber singles guy to championship tag team with Jim Neidhart to Intercontinental to world title to legend. And it that came in stages. And I think fans like watching people on that journey and in good hands, booking wise and with a good setting and a good structure. That's a really good way to become a star. But, you know, I don't think he's young enough. They shouldn't be in any hurry. But, you know, I mean, buy Kyle Fletcher stock right now after what we've seen in recent weeks. Joel?
I absolutely would, because I think that, you know, right now AEW is trying to push a lot of these younger stars. They're trying to build some other people like Ricky Starks, like Swerve, and trying to put them in better positions. And I think just the little sample size that we've seen of Kyle Fletcher as a single star, I think he's going to start surpassing some of those other people. You know, we've seen, you know, Ricky get some of these opportunities, and we kind of saw how things kind of went off the rails with Adam Copeland on Collision. And I just think that Kyle Fletcher at this point in time is a lot more polished than some of these other guys. I think that on the microphone, he's a lot more polished than, you know, a super young, you know, 19-year-old or 18-year-old Nick Wayne, where he's really going to start, you know, becoming one of those guys. I think Tony is going to recognize that he can put him in a higher level position and that he's actually going to perform, and he's really going to take the ball and run with it. One of my comments on the Kenny Omega Kyle Fletcher match was, man, when is the last time that you saw the full wrestling match and you were left wanting more? I mean, we see so many great matches where it's like 30 minutes of just exhaustion where you're like, oh my God, that was so great, but holy crap, that was a lot, and now it's over. Or, you know, things that are so boring. But, man, this was the first time where I'm like, I wanted to see like 10, 15 minutes more of that match. And, and granted, it is with Kenny Omega, and Kenny Omega is going to have great matches. But, man, I wanted to see more of that. And again, it just makes me look forward to, you know, rematching that at some point down the road.
Yeah, it's not going to be long before people are going to go, would you rather have Kyle Fletcher or Kenny Omega on your roster? When you think about what's left for them and what they're showing right now, you know, it's
I don't disagree.
Yeah. JV also says, was it a good idea to have the Battle Royal as the main event? I know modern weekly episodic wrestling, the main event doesn't mean what it used to, but it seems to be mostly composed of mid-carders at best. And everyone knew Juice Robinson was going to win. Although I did like the wrinkle they added with Max Caster, as it gave me slight doubt with the story being told. Yeah, MJF was good on commentary going, I don't want this match to end because I don't want either of them to win, because I'm going to be miserable for very different reasons depending on who wins here. And he also says, why should MJF and Jay White brawling on the ramp distract the ref in ring from Juice using the ring? Aren't Battle Royals no DQ? Those things should be made clear. Yeah, AEW is not good on details on that. You know, the perpetual heel attacking a babyface before the bell and the ref going, well, I'll reward that pre-match attack by calling for the bell. So dumb. It's such a lame shortcut crutch, and they just need to up their attention to detail on especially how referees act. But back to you kind of showed your hand there, Joel. Battle Royal in the main event. A bunch of people who, you know, like Johnny TV. I mean, you'd barely even know he's in the company if all you do is watch Dynamite. And or Dynamite and Collision, for that matter. He's just sort of a Rampage guy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, nobody believes he's going to win. And they could have made people think maybe it's going to be his moment and done a little something. But they just wanted to dedicate their TV time to what the end would be rather than create doubt for the sake of making the match feel like it wasn't just a bunch of inevitable losers and one or two potential winners.
Yeah, I think you heard, too, from our on-site correspondent, Mike B, that, you know, Penta got one of the biggest pops of the show just, you know, in the proximity of being closer to Mexico, that a lot of fans are familiar with him. And so I think that they probably wanted to have that match on first when people are going to be super energized, give him that huge pop. But honestly, I think you could have flipped those two around and have that Battle Royal come on first, and then you could have just flipped that Penta and Jay White into the main event spot, and then you could have done something, you know, something different with MJF at the end of the show, you know, if you wanted to save the pop for him towards the end. Because, you know, as an alternative, what we saw was just, you know, like you said, a bunch of mid-card guys and guys that you almost forget are on the roster, you know, just kind of doing a generic, I want to say inconsequential battle royal, but yeah, it does lead to a match against MJF next week against the world champion for the Dynamite Diamond Ring. But the people who are in the match, I mean, are mostly, you know, losers on the roster.
It's almost like they wanted to hide that was the main event too. I mean, you had the juice talk, but they didn't, you know, they could have done some, but they could have done more to hype the match. But I mean, they are trying to sell us on the idea that this diamond ring that nobody mentions for, you know, 11 out of 12
yeah.
months is a big deal. And they're not good at explaining it. Not good. Excaliburs aren't, Tony Khan's aren't when it comes to, oh, yeah, not everybody remembers everything that ever happened in AEW, especially, you know, convoluted things like this. I was, I mean, it's just they have to explain this stuff to people and get them excited about it again and feel like it's a big deal. And I mean, there were a couple times during the show where I was like, what's the main event? What are they going to end with? Is it going to be a talking segment or a match? I'm literally forgetting that the match is even happening later.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
just, I mean, the little corner graphics, they think, oh, that's all we need. It's like, well, you're throwing a lot at us there. And part of it is it just didn't feel like the Battle Royal with the competitors was main event worthy. Therefore, at times it didn't cross my mind that was actually going to be the concluding segment.
Yeah, I just don't think it. I think you could have gotten away with having something else there. I understand that MJF is the world champion and you want to make that the A storyline, but I think that just could have happened at a different point in the show, and, you know, it could have built the show a little bit better, other than just kind of peaking at the top of the hour, at the 8 o'clock hour with the Kenny Omega, Kyle Fletcher, and then, you know, things just kind of, you know, we're on a slower decline from there.
JB also wants to know if we think Danhausen and Tony Storm are going to cross paths. What do you think is going on with Danhausen and his little vignettes?
I mean, why not? You know, it's just a very, very nice, very evil video. I mean, Danhausen, I'm more indifferent towards him. Sure, I get a kick out of the shtick, but do I think it really fits with the rest of the show? I mean, there was a point in time where I said, no, it doesn't fit with the rest of the show. This is kind of a weird indie gimmick, but at this point in time, like I said, it's more of a variety show of different things that they're throwing out there, so it's, you know, it's whatever.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Danhausen, but it has to make sense context-wise, but it'd be fun to perhaps see their worlds cross. JB says he could show up in Toni Storm in her films, all the German expressionism of the 1920s. I did not go to film school, so I'll have to research what that could end up looking like. But yeah, that's fun. I want to know what will Sting's retirement match be? Should it be Nick Wayne or maybe a singles match, or does it have to be multi-man? We covered that earlier. He did say the acting for the Nick Wayne interview with his mom was reminiscent of a below-average promo. Joel, what did you think of that segment? This had potential to be real campy and real cringy, but, you know, perhaps emotional and genuine too. How did it work for you?
I mean, I didn't think it was. Certainly wasn't the worst, you know, it wasn't the worst of, you know, potential outcomes. The thing that mostly stood out to me was that, you know, they have all these different styles of how they shoot these backstage interviews, where there was just that weird one where, who was it? It was Renee Young was with Adam Copeland, where it was just kind of weird, where they're just kind of sitting on some boxes of equipment, which is kind of a weird, uninteresting background. And then they have this one with Jim Ross, and Jim just did not seem the best in this one, where he's been a lot of kind of up and down. And this one, his just voice was really hoarse. And I really appreciate that Jim, you know, he brings the some legitimacy to it, but there's just some questions, you know, as far as how he's really doing these days, that just seems tougher, but I'm still glad to see him out there. You know, the acting between Nick Wayne's mom, who her name is Shayna. They didn't give her a name. They keep saying Nick Wayne's mom, but her name is Shayna Wayne. And I wish they would say that. I just hate the insider, like, oh, we're just going to say his mom. And like, it's going to be funny. Cause like, I know that's like what they go for is like that, like, oh, it's funny. It's Nick Wayne's mom. It's like, no, her name is Shayna. And, you know, I think that she did her best, you know, being out there. These weird low angle shots that they had, just the weird camera cuts, just didn't make any sense. And like at one point you could see like one of the camera guys just crouched over pointing, tilting his camera upwards. And I'm like, what is that shot? Like, why would you, I just don't understand why the director would choose that. It's just, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. But you know, it was not the worst of things. And Nick Wayne, you know, he's very young, so I give him a lot of slack on that he's, you know, and he was fine. It wasn't bad, but it was a little cheesy. And then saying that you're dead to me, I mean, that's what, you know, a 13-year-old says to their parents, you know, when they're mad that they didn't get something at the store or something, you know, and she slapped him, and then it goes into Darby Allin doing the attack. But I thought the stuff with Christian, I like him, you know, standing over him, you know, I have my dad here. I think Christian is just phenomenal in his role doing that stuff, his new father figure in Christian.
Yeah, I enjoyed this segment. I thought there was definitely a campiness to it more than a cringiness to it. And I was worried it'd be more cringy than campy, and I think campy's better than cringy. But yeah, Nick Wayne as the petulant, rebellious kid, I wish he was just a little bit better in terms of his acting. Just a little bit better would be just enough to get him, like, he's passable, but I want him to be, like, a little better than just on the bottom of passable in terms of his acting. But it's not – but it is in the range of passable. You know what I mean? Like, it's –
yeah,
I just
yep,
want to be,
exactly.
It's passable. I just want it to be better than just passable. But I don't want to sound like I'm just dogging on it, like, oh, it's awful. And his mom seemed – genuine and, you know, sympathetic. And I thought, you know, his line, hey, why did I leave Darby? You know, she said all the obvious things after what he said about your dad. And, you know, like, all, she just made the case for why it's just, she's broken over this. And he's like, well, with Darby, it wasn't about me. It was about, look what Darby did for me. Everything was about framed about Darby did this for me and Darby helped me here and did this for me. And I want it to be about me. And Christian is allowing it to be about me, which of course isn't the case. Everything Christian does is about him. Even if he pretends it's about someone else, it's about him. But Nick Wayne's young, and he's making a mistake. And everybody sees that he's making a mistake. And his mom is pleading with him, but he's in that rebellious stage that people, I think, can relate to and buy into. So I'll tell you this. Nick Wayne is not coming across as too nice and affable to be believable as a heel. Like, I do believe him in this role. So that's good. It's just he's acting a little too hard in what he's doing. So, yeah.
I'd like to see him change up his look too, you know, and now that he's had this, you know, this interaction with his mom of the rebellious stage of I'm moving out of the house, you know, I'm doing my own thing now. I'd like to see him kind of change up some of that look and give him something that looks a little bit more mature.
JB also brought up Lance Archer. What are the immediate plans for him going forward? Any thoughts on that, Joel?
My notes was now just do something with Lance, you know? Yeah. I mean, they bring him in, he squashes, you hear the everybody dies, and then he, you know, they build him up for some other, you know, TV match, and then he loses. and then we don't see him for a super long time, and I see him on Twitter cooking steaks, and then he shows up, and he does another squash match against somebody you've never heard of, and then he does, you know, a kind of a mid-card loss, and that's, and then he's gone. You know, I think Lance, there's a lot more out of him. He's a big, athletic guy. You know, he brings, you know, in the earlier days of AEW, he kind of brings an energy. He's almost got a little bit of Stan Hansen in him, you know, where he's got some of that, like, kind of just, going against the crowd. Like, you always talk about swinging the cowbell and all that kind of stuff. I mean, he's got a little bit of closer to that, of more of like that Stan Hansen. And I want to see some more of that. I think that there's a lot you can do with him as a good wrestler, big guy, super athletic. And it's just, you know, this is kind of what he's been doing lately.
Yeah. I mean, Lance Archer's sort of the poster boy for, oh, this guy's cool, badass. What's going to happen with him? And then by next week, you kind of forget. And then like, 8 weeks later, like, he's still in the company? Like, AEW does that too much, you know, and it's too much start and stop. You know, we just, you know, I mean, remember House of Black was a thing. And there's not a canon explanation for, you know, what is there? Is there a canon explanation for what happened to them?
No, I mean, it has the stuff with Sky Blue, you know, from what happened with Julia Hart, but really there's been nothing else that's happened with House of Black. I mean, they are the kings of the start and stop, where they show up for a little bit. I mean, Malakai Black just shows up for a little bit. Well, the real king of that is Miro, where he comes out for the one big match, and then all of a sudden the guy just does a bunch of backstage vignettes talking about his hot and flexible wife, or he's talking about God as the Redeemer, and then you just don't see him forever. And I know he's got a match coming up here on Collision where he's going to be wrestling Action Andretti, following up on the stuff with CJ Perry. But yeah, there's just so many of these guys where it's start, stop, start, stop. And you just want to be able to latch on to somebody and just be along for the ride of the story. And these stories don't always have to be these super long, drawn out for months at a time. I mean, you could tell just a few weeks of a story and then build that into the next thing. I mean, you can find different styles, and doesn't always have to be the same way.
In the hits and misses column that will be posted up on pwtorchvip.com, and I encourage people, if you're a fan of our podcast, to also please check out our website, pwtorch.com. Greg Kanner does the Dynamite Hits and Misses column. He commented on the name with his mom a miss as it furthered the story. It is not going to take home an Oscar or Emmy, maybe a Razzie though. The acting was way over the top and amateur, but he's going to need these kinds of reps if he's going to improve. So I'm not going to criticize it too much. And then he talked about the physicality being good. I will use this to transition into Greg's comment on the Adam Cole, the latest Adam Cole skit. He says, so Adam Cole has been doing chores and not cutting the crust of bread as strong house. Huh? Now, this is beyond stupid, not funny, and ruining Adam Cole. Please be finished. So, Joel, Cole's still there. The funny lines in this were Cole brings him hot coffee, and Roderick says, you know, I don't like hot coffee. Okay. In the old days, they used to be peanut butter jelly sandwiches, and Cole was good at that. And so we got more camera angles in that skit than we did in the Nick Wayne mom Ross Christian skit. Mm-hmm. And then Roderick spit out the sandwich, and that was enough. Cole, after nearly a month of being at Roderick Strong's house, remember Britt Baker used to be in AEW too, and away from Britt Baker, he's now decided he's going to go have surgery. We have no idea, character-wise, why he would hang out. Maybe it's all deception, and they're hanging out together and they're friends and they're putting on an act, and Cole really has already turned on MJF, and this is an excuse to not be there for MJF, and maybe that's the story they're telling. We'll see. But as viewers, there's no ostensible reason that he would hang out there for all these weeks at a time and do Roderick Strong's chores. It's disqualifying of having any respect for him. He has no dignity. He has no judgment. you know, there's no amount, there's nothing he did that would justify him feeling this beholden to him, especially with two able-bodied men there who could help, and he's rolling around his injured ankle. So, so it's just, it is dumb, and it makes no sense, and it's not funny enough to make up for it. I think they think it's delightfully, awesomely funny, and it's not, and it's, again, it's just kind of too much of, you know, we see that with the best friends too. You know, there's just too much of that kind of sense of humor, you know, the mom in the minivan, and you know, we have Neck Strong, which is just the dumbest thing. Nobody cares about that. It's not even a thing. And they're acting like it's the most over thing. And everyone's just going to be slapping their knees and laughing. So
yeah,
it's just a mess. It's been derailed. MJF's on to Jay White. I think people are not hate watching, but they are kind of keeping an eye on it just because it's so weird, but it doesn't mean it's good. And I don't think Adam Cole is obviously destined to be bigger or better because of this. And it seems like, unless there's some just killer conclusion that'll make up for this journey, I think he's going to be worse off and hard to take seriously anymore. Joel, that's a lot that I had to say about it. How about you?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I would say, you know, Adam Cole, and a lot of this has to do with, you know, he's had a lot of injuries since coming into AEW, that's taken him out of action, unfortunately, but he has to be either at the top or near the top of the list of just the most disappointing acquisitions in the company, where people had very, very high hopes for what he'd be able to do. And it just never has amounted to that. You know, he had the big match against MJF at Wembley Stadium, which is, you know, probably the highest point that he's had, you know, in during his time here. But everything else has just been really a disappointment. I mean, you do have to seriously ask the question. I know people have speculated, you know, how serious is this injury that he has, that this is going on, that it's really just feels like these segments are, they're so ridiculous that they're, and I think that's what they think makes it so funny. And I talked about this, you know, whenever one of the last post shows that we were doing, is that there's just this mindset within AEW, and MJF does this a lot, and Chris Jericho is also guilty of this, where it's like almost thinking about what's this, how can I get over the most ridiculous thing that I can get on a t-shirt, or I can get the crowd to chant. And like, it's almost just like popping the boys in the back, you know, it's not like something that's going to ever generate any money or fan interest. It's just almost this like self-serving, self-indulgent, you know, like, ha, look at what I can do. I can get this thing over. Oh, we got this, you know, we got the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, you know, and especially with MJF getting over the kangaroo kick. And man, you got to hand it to him that he was able to get over a lot of these different things by leaning into a lot of these, you know, rock type tendencies. But it's just, it's these types of things where it's like, it gets to this point where, yes, it's kind of fun if you can get a couple of these goofy things over, or if everything else is working really well and the promotion's really hot, you know, I can buy into some of that stuff. But when right now things just seem pretty flat, there's not a lot to be excited about at this point in time. This just kind of adds on and piles on to what people are not liking about the promotion. And it's just putting that exclamation point on that stuff that's driving people away.
All right, back to JB. He goes, what's up with the Tony Storm films being on the split screen? It seems like a relatively overact that should be getting more focus. Is the strategy that they think this would be more effective in making sure the audience doesn't flip the channel during the split screen segments? Yes, I can say Tony Khan is very proud of this as a way to hold the audience. And I do think there's something to that. The problem is nobody wanted to see Sammy Guevara hold up cue cards at full screen. Tony Storm, for the audience that is embracing it, and I'm among them, I don't want to have a loud, blaring commercial taking up two-thirds of the screen when I'm watching her brilliance in this character, however it's ultimately going to fit into the wrestling show, and whether it is one of, like, to me, this is the one that has earned its time compared to all the other things you just mentioned. You know, I'm going to create the next t-shirt that sells, or the next thing that trends, or the next hashtag. This is really entertaining, but it is almost – Tony's doing almost too good of a job, and that's why I had the reaction I had last week. Like, no, not split screen. I want to see this. I want to appreciate it. And so, yeah, JB's kind of thinking the same thing. It should have more focus. Now, Tony might think it's crazy for us to say it should be full screen because it is a little bit of a cult like following probably that she has. And it's very possible that a 3-minute silent movie at full screen would never make the cut on Dynamite. And so if we like this, we just have to accept we're going to have to squint or move closer to the TV set and hit mute because he is not going to dedicate 2 or 3 minutes to a Toni Storm silent movie on Dynamite.
Right.
Now, as a one-off, you know, 1-minute thing, that's kind of what I thought we were getting last week. That's fine. But if it is going to be an ongoing thing and they can stretch it out and make it work, I mean, I you know, putting a banana in her mouth and doing pearl necklace double entendres, I'm not sure if that is as sophisticated and sustainable as some other, I think, sharper humor could be. But I'm not sure it's awful either to go there. You know, RTK City is, you know, I mean, he like cooks in his kitchen in his underwear and, you know, it's like he's just like, that's his character. He's just like, you know, there's a little bit of, I don't know, teasing and tantalizing wink to the audience that he does in some YouTube videos too. So I think there's a chemistry there in doing that kind of, I don't know if it's flirtatious or just, yeah. So anyway, but it might be, the audience might be frustrated like us, but I also think if you want a long Toni Storm silent movie, you're going to have to live with it being in split screen. And I think it does have a chance to hold the audience, and we're going to find out because Tony Khan studies that stuff, Joel. He's going to know if it's holding the audience better than just a brawl in the ring or a ring entrance or people slapping hands, you know, as they circle the ring. He's going to study this stuff. I think he studies it. I think the time he spends studying a 3-minute drop in audience would be better spent on big picture things that would make more of a difference, but he has that attention to detail. And I don't think it's a bad thing as long as he, you know, doesn't displace things that are more important that he'd address.
Yeah. I think that this is a good spot, a good thing to try and put in that split screen to try and help because, you know, I mean, of course, when they're looking for the next TV deal, they want to see, you know, they're going to need advertisers for it. That's going to be a big part of that. And trying to hold the audience during those commercial breaks, I mean, is going to be a big deal for them. So, I mean, I like this experiment of trying to do that. And, you know, the alternative is just having it in full screen, but it's just going to have that, you know, just kind of like, what is that? That 1920s kind of style music, which we got to hear the last bit of before they immediately went into that Jim Ross sit-down interview, which was just kind of a weird transition from there. But the commercials, having that in the background, like I mentioned, that was kind of weird watching this because I'm intently watching this Toni Storm thing because they talked about it a lot. You know, they're building it on social media, building online. Like they said, it's Toni Storm's next movie, and they kept having graphics for it. So they made it into a thing. And then, yeah, to have the commercial sound was a little bit weird that you'd think that because they're building up to it so much that it would have more attention drawn to it. But, you know, I think because it's a silent movie, sure, yeah, it works to have that in kind of the side screen. And, you know, they built to it too, saying that next week she's going to have her own personal butler. You know, is that going to be RJ City in a different kind of character? Who knows? You know, or is that going to lead to somebody else being associated with her? You know, we're just going to have to find out.
A couple other things, and I'll throw to you if there's anything that you want to bring up that we left off. I had 3 things on my mind, and I want to do them in the order I was thinking, and I'm trying to remember what the first one was now. Adam Copeland. Yeah, I want to start with that. The one thing missing, there was good and bad about the sit-down interview with Adam Copeland. There are too many kind of sit-down interview type things on the show and, you know, corny vignettes and stuff. I think they overdid it in that way. But with Copeland, what I want an acknowledgement of from him is that Christian has gone batshit crazy and isn't the person he once knew and is saying horrible things about dead fathers and dead uncles and people's past. And Copeland, by saying, well, I wanted to come back and team with him, like, were you not watching what he's been doing?
Yeah, it feels so disconnected.
Yeah, like have some sort of moral compass or awareness, one or the other, and acknowledge it. Like Adam's got to like be more real. And as he's looking at Renee, I almost think he should kind of break away and look at the camera and go, like, or you know, I don't break. It's not even breaking the fourth wall of the camera. Usually, sit down interviews, they talk to the person who's interviewing them. But something where it's almost an aside, going, yeah, you know, I wanted to come back and kind of have a final chapter with Christian, and he beat me here, and quite frankly, I was wondering, you know, what was in the water in AEW, because this is he's gone off the deep end, and I thought maybe I could talk some sense into him. But the more that I tried, the more he just seemed like he wasn't the person I once knew. I thought maybe being back here, it would shake him out of it, but he's as bad up close as he was from a distance. Like, whatever, you can polish that up, but like, I think he should be conveying to viewers that he knows Christian is a despicable human being saying horrible things, as opposed to feeling sympathy for him that the people who he sees as hangers on are going to drop him and he's going to be there to lift him up. You can say all that as long as you also acknowledge and own he is a scumbag. Well, he doesn't deserve Copeland's friendship unless he, you know, corrects course and apologizes for his behavior and shakes out of it. So that just seems like a missing element so far with Copeland. Like, just coming out and going, hey, Christian, let's be friends. Will you shake my hand? It's like, wait, don't you want to know if he is repenting for what he's doing and going to stop being the jerk he's been?
Yeah, I mean, it just feels like Christian is just, like, owning him right now, and Adam Copeland is just kind of sad off to the side about this. I mean, I just thought it was really interesting that, you know, when she asked him in the beginning about it, and Adam Copeland was just saying that, you know, things have really changed here, or things have not been right. I can't remember exactly what he said, and it really just made me think about what did he say exactly? He doesn't know, said he was confused and doesn't know what happened. And he just really was like going over the top about that. And it just made me think about that promo that he had with Ricky Starks, where they both kind of went off script there. That was almost kind of like, I'm not really sure what happened coming to this place. You know, this was kind of different than I thought it would be. But right now it just feels like, and I don't know how long Adam Copeland signed for to be in AEW, if it's just a one-year deal or just one program going with Christian. I don't know what the extent of all that is, and maybe you can elaborate further on as far as what you know, but it just feels like, man, like I remember talking about like Jon Moxley and some of these other wrestlers who came from WWE, where it just didn't feel like it was the afterthought of their career. It felt like this was a new chapter, an extension. It wasn't like their end of their career, that everything they did in WWE was what mattered. And now they're, you know, and now in AEW, they're doing also stuff that matters. Whereas it feels like with Adam Copeland, that it's like, yeah, I had my career in WWE. I made my money. I made my fame. And now I'm just kind of going here for my own personal project to do something with Christian Cage, you know, not talking about any of the other wrestlers, just kind of focusing on his relationship there, trying to rekindle something that was all started in a different promotion. Yes, it is their childhood. They're both friends with each other. But it just, in a way, just makes everything, like, there's like a subtext there where the way he talks about it just makes it feel like he's above other stuff in AEW. Like, he wasn't really interested in, like, if Christian was in WWE, then he'd want to just tell the same thing there, other than having a real purpose to wanting to come to a new promotion. I mean, does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, it does. It's like half of what it needed to be, and then a fourth of what it shouldn't be, and then a fourth is just completely missing.
Yeah.
And it just isn't coming together as much as it should. And it feels like they're one, Copeland's looking unaware or unconcerned about things that the audience is very invested in.
Yeah.
And wanting something that I don't think fans want. Like, I just don't think people are clamoring for Edge and Christian to be a team. Like, I just don't think that's
so.
People look at Christian now as so much better than that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think of like the example of like some people who hung out together, and I mean, not Christian, Edge were a big act, but then you become so much big. I'm trying to think of like a good example of where somebody just exceeds. I don't like Brian Pillman showing up in WWE and going, or WWF and going, hey, Stone Cold, let's reunite the Hollywood Blondes. That's what I've been thinking about. It's like, nobody's thinking about that. Stone Cold is like, yes, I just compared current Christian heel to Stone Cold Steve Austin at his hottest, but like, you don't want to seem oblivious if you're the babyface to the notion that Christian is actually doing something right now in the modern era much better and more relevant and entertaining and than anything that they frankly did together.
Than anything he's done else in his career.
Yes, and he's had good moments.
Yeah, and he has. I mean, he's totally reshaped himself and made himself into this really great heel character. And it's like he's still like, I think he's still burning hot that he's this great character. And I mean, would it be crazy to say that in the context of AEW, it just feels like Christian Cage is a bigger star than Adam Copeland is. He just feels like this guy left at the altar where it's like he's trying to rekindle something from another promotion where it's just not what the fans want. I mean, like what fans want out of Adam Copeland is they want to see dream matches with other people.
I know.
You know, they want to see him against, they want to see another John Moxley match. They want to see the Kenny Omega match. Any of these other people. They want to see him against Jay White.
Yes, I wish he could have a good program with Ricky Starks as opposed to tearing him down. That kind of thing where someone gets elevated by being in his presence and sharing TV space with him. Okay, the other thing I want to bring up is Prince Nana Swerve Strickland thing. We haven't talked about that. I've always been concerned and gotten the impression that one thing that has held Swerve Strickland back in wrestling is that the people around him sense he cares more about being in the music studio than he did thinking about his promos, thinking about his matches, and being a pro wrestling star. And now they're playing into that. it's just like everybody's sort of on their own to do their own thing, do their projects. And Swerve Strickland, his natural tendency is to drive into the music studio and do that. Now, it can add to his character, but I was like, so I was watching this going, oh no, we're getting that again. It's like in NXT, it's like, oh, it's all about my music. It's like, do you want to be a successful wrestler? Or do you want to be in music? Like, if you want to be a wrestler, don't give me the impression it's your side gig and you're just hoping to make it big in music. So with that said, I actually thought then there was enough good content in the framing of that to win me over. The music is cool. Like, you know, it's like, it's cool that he does that. It's something AEW doesn't have. But also, he goes, my match against you, Hangman, at first wasn't about you. It was about the spot. Now it's about you. It's personal. So I like that then it came back full circle, not to, hey, there's this music video, and it's going to be great and tune in. It came down to, yeah, I'm doing this. It's my side gig. But I'm going to make you pay. And now it's personal. And it did seem like he cared about Hangman Page. So what did you think about that? Did you go on any kind of a journey like I did watching that?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, they're trying to promote the music video and get people to watch that on YouTube. But I like that he brought it back to talking about Hangman Page. And when he said it was personal, I think that Swerve, it can be a really good promo. I just, you know, I didn't hear your take as far as last week, him having the match against Danielson. Yes, good match. But I just wouldn't have made that match, you know, because Danielson needed the win too. And I just feel like Swerve, yeah, he goes against Hangman Page and then he loses. And now we're supposed to go back into believing that Swerve's going to be, you know, on his trajectory to being a top star again. And it's just like, man, it's hard to, you know, when it has kind of that start stop, because Danielson, of course, you know, that you need to keep building wins for him. But I just wouldn't have booked that match altogether.
Yeah. Joel, anything else you want to add before we sign off here?
Let's take a look through the notes. Let's see here. Nothing. Nothing too important to add. I mean, yeah, I'm just going to add to the same sentiment about MJF that, you know, there's just really something that's been lost with him. And I don't know if it's just totally the comedy stuff. I think when he does the seriousness, like at the beginning of his promo, you know, I like that when he does more of the serious stuff. But it's still, too, just with him being the baby face, and I'm just like, you had to commit one way or another on what you were going to do with him, and it would be so hard to lean into the baby face tendencies and then just be a whole trick, and then, you know, he goes back into being a heel, which could still happen at some point down the road. But, yeah, I mean, Todd's mentioned this before, but it's just losing that cool factor where he used to have so much charisma and just such a cool guy. And I feel like there's something missing of that charisma now where it's just not the same thing when he's on the microphone. You just were expecting those great one-liners before, and it's just like he owned the room, he owned the microphone, and I just don't sense the same thing anymore.
Yeah, Yeah. All right. Well, very good. Joel, thank you. Any predictions on where the Wolves finish if they stay healthy in the NBA standings in the Western Conference by the end of the season?
That's tremendous, because I was going to ask you the same question. you know, what's funny is that the Vegas actually has them at 48.5 wins, and that's predicting them to finish second in the West. And if you turn on ESPN and you see any of these guys like Kendrick Perkins or Richard Jefferson talk about how, you know, who's going to finish in the playoffs, they don't even mention the Timberwolves. They don't talk about them. They say that Oklahoma City is going to be better than the Timberwolves this year. And I just don't think that's
– They were a fun team, but that was not, I mean, a sign of imminent dominance, what we saw from them last year. They were scrappy and fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they
and talented and on the rise, but not ready, not at the Wolves level. Jeez,
they have Shea and they have Chet, who's coming off a pretty serious injury. You know, he's a Minnesota guy, so we hope that he does well as you know in the NBA. But I think that you know just don't be surprised when they lose the first five games and we all get down and we all get mad and we all say trade Cat or trade Rudy or trade whomever. I think that it could be rough to start, but you know what? They've won all their preseason games and hopefully that keeps rolling into the season. And I think that this is the most stacked Timberwolves roster they've ever had in history. So if you guys have been sleeping on the Timberwolves, this is the team I'd buy a stock in. You know, get it, jump on the bandwagon early. I don't mind bandwagon fans at all. I want to see people jump on with the Timberwolves and start supporting the team, because I truly believe that this is going to be a really fun season for them.
There's two kind of bandwagon jumping fans. The ones who only want to follow a winner, and they don't care if somebody isn't winning but on the rise, and they're not on board for that until they're winners. And, you know, not screw them, because people can do what they want with their free time, and those fans help sell out stadiums, you know, come playoff time and raise secondary ticket prices. But the bandwagon jumping fans who are justified are the ones who don't want to support or follow a poorly run organization with players who aren't trying hard. And then suddenly the team gets good and then you follow them. Well, you've earned them. So I just think there should always be two categories of bandwagon jumping fans. Yes, there's the Johnny Come Latelys who are like, didn't follow them even when they should have been, because they were exciting even when they were a little below 500. The Wolves have been a mix of both. Like, you know, exciting and young and up and coming, and also very maddening. And at times, and you know, there's been incompetence in management and all of that. And certainly Carl Anthony Towns tests my patience with his, you know, 10-year-old maturity. His stray voltage, as we call it here, when he's just flailing his arms, trying to draw attention to fouls, and just there's a petulant, self-entitled immaturity to him that belies his. And by the way, I spotted it from the beginning when we first drafted him, and he was just well-spoken. I just want to be the best basketball player in history, and I want to bring championships to this town. And I'm just like, he's so full of it. He just likes the sound of his own voice. He's been taught what to say. You can talk a good game. Go show it to me. I didn't buy it. I expressed that in some DMs to some local media.
I was like,
be careful about this guy, because he thinks he can talk his way in and out of anything, because he has been spoiled, and he has. So I called it from the beginning, and I'm so sick of him complaining to refs and flailing his arms, and when he falls on the ground taking three bumps and then not getting back on defense. He drives me nuts. He is also mega talented, and if he can just grow up one of these years, he's great. But one of the local analysts said the disappointing thing with him, and I wish I could give credit to who it was, the most disappointing aspect of Cat is that he seems like he is not as dedicated to being a winner, or he's really not dedicated to being a winner. What he's dedicated to is showing people how gifted offensively he is as a player, and everything else is just getting in the way of what he wants to do, which is show everyone how pretty and talented he is on offense. And he is a gifted, amazing offensive player in ways that there's no category. There's no one who preceded him in terms of his size and his set of skills that just are so different than anybody else. There's no kind of comparison. There's many great shooting guards, and you can go, oh, he's just like Dwayne Wade, or he's just like, but no, there's nobody like him.
But he just doesn't do himself any favors at all, especially when he's talking to the media or doing interviews. I mean, like, he, when he says things like, I'm going to be talked about as somebody who changed the game. And it's like people, you know, they get mad where he gets mad when people mock him about that stuff. But it's like, come on, dude.
Yep.
Like,
he's so unselfaware.
He's so not aware of this stuff. I mean, it's unbelievable. But yeah, that Wade, that was spoken like a true Timberwolves fan. I mean, we've been watching this team. I've been watching this team in KG days when my mom had a suite at Target Center. She used to work for Ticketmaster, and so we'd go to all these games there all the time, seeing KG. My dad and I would go to the post KG era. So it's like, you know, for us to watch this team and actually succeed, it is that satisfaction of this uphill battle for a couple decades of watching this failing franchise, you know, finally overcome and do something great. But a lot of the characteristics that you were saying about Towns, they're different personality, but a lot of similar things to our quarterback as well.
Yeah.
Very different personalities. But
yeah.
Offensively yeah. gifted, looking at their numbers, their stats, not a true winner. Ugh.
Yeah. Well, as far as the Wolves go, I'm excited about this team if they can stay healthy, and I'm more excited even if they can't because of some of the depth that they have. And I am, it'll be the usual pattern. I'll be disappointed in mid-December, swearing them off the first week of January, and then by mid-February going, oh, they're not so bad after all. Let's get excited for the close of the season. I hope, because it's a pattern so much. I hope that it's different this year, but it is a stacked West, and we're going to lose some games to good teams. But we're going to surprise some people, too, again, if everybody stays healthy. And I mean, the Wolves were good last year, and they lost Cat how many games was it? Did he miss more than half the season?
Oh, he missed more than half the season. Yeah. It was like in December that he was out, and then he didn't come back until, was it March, maybe? Maybe early March, I want to say.
And then, you know, what would the Wolves have done in the playoffs if they did not lose Kyle Anderson to the eye injury, and if we didn't have Jaden McDaniels punching a curtain that had a brick wall behind it and breaking his hand? I mean, it's just people don't understand. The Wolves had to be in the play-in tournament because Cat was out for as long as he was, and then didn't win in the playoffs against the team that ended up winning the championship because Kyle Anderson and even more so Jaden McDaniel weren't available. And if you put them in against Denver, we might have won that series. And I think we played them as tough as anybody.
We played them tougher than anybody else. I watched all the Denver games in the playoffs. And I am telling you that the Timberwolves played them tougher than anybody else that they went up against in the entire playoff run. And had
without
they had those
Jaden.
Without Jaden McDaniels, without
Who nobody's
Kyle
heard of,
Anderson.
And, he is, and so many people haven't heard of Jaden McDaniel. And it's like, he is just our little secret. He is like, I mean, he has a chance to be a max player, and it's going to screw things up for us. Because if he has a great season, you know, restricted free agency is going to force, you know, Kat or Rudy to be traded or cut or whatever, whatever it's going to take to make room for him. But you want Anthony Edwards and Jaden to be the centerpiece of this team going forward more than Rudy and Kat.
And there might be another guy, two words, Naz Reid.
Yes. Week to week, I change on whether it's a little bit of a mirage or not. I mean, it's not a mirage in that he's talented to add to the team, but I would love to have him have. But he's the other guy. Yeah, when you talk about the playoffs, I just left him out. Man, you add him and Jaden and then Kyle in the last game, it's a completely different. Yeah, I mean, we could have won the championship. I just. We could have, because we almost beat Denver.
It's just like
with
Sam Cassell doing the big balls. We could have won the championship. We could have been there.
I mean, seriously, two of the best five players were down, and then we lost Kyle Anderson, the spiritual leader and on-court leader.
Yeah.
And
the
really
real
good
glue player. Guy. I mean, he, in every sense of the word, I mean, he was the guy, the professional in the room who kept things together. Mike Conley was a genius move to
we
bring
got him for
in
a
here.
Full year.
Yep. And if he could just turn back the clock a little bit, I mean, they're going to have to restrict his minutes a bit. But, man, to have such a professional like Mike Conley come in here, if you haven't read his columns, too, that he does with Jace Frederick with the Pioneer Press called Conley's Corner, God, the guy is just so smart. I mean, he's so smart.
He's going to be on Dane Moore's podcast, I think.
Yeah.
Weekly. during the season. He's great with the media. He gives great answers. So I love that he respects the media, because when you respect the media, the right media, not all media, but when you respect reporters who deserve to be respected and given access, what you're doing is you're respecting the fans and you're rewarding good journalism. So when you give access to the media, you're giving to the fans through the conduit of the reporter in a way that just going directly to the fans doesn't work as well, because when reporters are doing their job, they're going to get more out of you. And so, yeah, he gets that. You know, Conley gets the that there are certain people who deserve his time, and I think, you know, he likes talking about the sport and sharing his knowledge. And so, anyway.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So it's next week. It all starts, and we'll –
It starts next week. Wade, let's go to a game. I got tickets this year.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's make it happen.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to us. If we don't have you excited about the Timberwolves, what's wrong with you? And for our overseas listeners who don't follow the NBA or whatever, people who didn't even know Minnesota had an NBA team, that's the National Basketball Association, the professional basketball team that Kevin Garnett, who you've heard of, was on. All right. Thanks, Joel. Been fun talking to AEW and some NBA. And thanks to our listeners, and we'll talk to you all next time.